Now we come to a section that we began a couple of weeks ago for the summer months called The Living Church, Understanding the Times. In understanding the times, we will think together critically, biblically, and Christianly about important cultural and practical issues for today's church. We will introduce you to some of the major issues in the church and the world, in family and parenting, in the news and current events, and look at them from a distinctively Christian perspective. We hope this will help better equip you to engage our culture and to think and live as a Christian. Tonight's is called A Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away. I first saw Star Wars here in Jackson in 1977, the day it opened. The episode called A New Hope was the first of a trilogy which has now expanded to 6 parts, the last of which The Revenge of the Sith is currently showing in a cinema near you. I fell in love with it on first sight. The sagacious Yoda, the gruff but loyal Wookiee Chewbacca, the brave furry Ewoks, the terribly English CP3O, the curiously likable R2-D2, the swashbuckling Hans Solo, the young Luke Skywalker, the masterful Obi-Wan, played by Sir Alec Guinness, and who can ever forget Darth Vader with that magnificent voice of James Earl Jones, and Lord Sidious, played by Ian McDermott, the very epitome of evil. The 6th installment, actually it's episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, currently showing, raises some curiously modern spiritual and ethical issues. We learn, for example, that the demise of young Anakin Skywalker to the dark side to become Darth Vader was the result of pride, of trying to reach for something that is forbidden. And yet, unlike the biblical account of the fall of Adam and Eve in the garden, it is not without some moral justification. He was trying to save the life of his beloved wife, Padme. You find yourself sympathizing with him, caught as he is in one of life's conundrums, damned if you do and damned if you don't. Anakin is even told by Obi-Wan, only a Sith deals in absolutes, a curious remark which may mean that Anakin isn't getting the whole picture, but in postmodern ears it will be understood as another affirmation of pluralism. It may well be the most telling remark in the entire series. It certainly becomes increasingly more difficult to believe that a sovereign providence or will is at work in George Lucas's universe. There is only a force which is wished for and assured in the case of the Jedi Knights who have learned to control or be controlled by it. But we're never sure what to make of this force. It has a dark side that can be succumbed to through allowing anger to show itself, something which is never fully explained and is more Buddhist than Christian. When Yoda renounces what he calls attachment, refusing even to mourn for the slain Jedi children, saying, attachment is a way to the dark side, many of us may be forgiven if we think Yoda's world is not worth dying for. Besides, it is Skywalker's attachment to Vader, his father, but he doesn't know that, that brings about the final redemption of Vader in the closing scenes of Episode 6. Certainly for Yoda, this world isn't worth much. Remember, in The Empire Strikes Back, he said, luminous are we, not this crude matter. The real world, as in Neoplatonism, is the world of the unseen, the spirit. But Christianity has always insisted on the value of the physical. This is where the doctrine of resurrection cuts across all world religions and makes Paul especially so countercultural. The moral basis of Lucas's world is skewed. Further corroboration, if it were needed, can be found in the redemption of Darth Vader. As my good friend Sean Brandt pointed out to me this week, Sean is a former student of mine and now a PCA minister and teacher of philosophy, Anakin's redemption comes without any atonement or restitution whatsoever. To kill the emperor is what he should have done in the very beginning. It does not atone for the killing of the young ones or his wife. Forgiveness does not come simply because God says so. He must needs send his own son to shed blood in atonement. The gospel is not that God forgives sin, as is so often thought even among evangelicals who should know better. It is that God does not reckon against us, sin against us, because he reckons it against his own son at Calvary. It is very different, I think, in Lord of the Rings, where we are told there is another will at work, one which gives the story a belief that the end was not simply the result of combined heroism on the part of the individual characters. Tolkien was dealing in absolutes in a way that portrays the reality of good and evil, evil in its cruelest and most malicious form, but not ultimately sovereign. There is, in the end of The Lord of the Rings, a sense of inevitability about the triumph of the good, hair-raising as the end has been. In Lucas's world, we are never sure where the force comes down. The world of the Shires was evidently worth saving, but Lucas's world is different. The impersonal force is a product of Lucas's admiration for Zen Buddhism and Taoism. All opposites only appear opposite, but are actually part of the whole. It is the dualism of yin and yang. Good and evil are temporary, and what is in view is balance, not the conquering of good over evil. With Christ-like figures, both Obi-Wan, Sir Alec Guinness, and Qui-Gon Jinn, played by Liam Neeson, and Satan-like figures, Darth Sidious and Darth Maul, remember, Darth Maul is red-skinned with horns. Remember, their first encounter was in the desert. Zen-like substitution of meditation over prayer, new age trust in feelings and intuition, and the reliance of technology as the instrument of liberation, Lucas has given the very essence of contemporary American spirituality. As Yoda might say it, difficult to resist, it is.